Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, October 23rd, 2014. A number of topics to cover tonight, and then the main science topic. Quite a few topics, actually, for the main science topic. I'll be talking more about the wind generation project and progress there. I'll be talking about the sighting spring this past week, comet passing Mars, and, just a quick comment. Boy, did NASA ever squelch on the information. I mean, they just put out ridiculously little information. Photoshopped photos, pictures of other comets, animation. Anyway, I'll talk a little bit about that. The Distributed Energy Project. Now, this is becoming more and more important as more and more people go to personal energy sources or private or localized energy sources, whether it's just an assist or whatever. The power companies are, you know, ignorant of the fact that the future is in distributed energy, just like in distributed computing back in the heyday of the IBM computer, mainframe computer. They didn't realize, and I worked in that industry during that whole time through the 80s. I worked as a principal engineer in a computer company that built telecommunications computers. They were called front-end processors for IBM mainframe computers. And I was integrally involved in that industry, and I can tell you that the leaders of that industry had no clue that distributed computing was on its way, and it would just simply take over what they call legacy computers, the big mainframes. But now we're in that situation with energy. At a time when energy is used to control the world, it's kind of like this. I remember when I was a kid, the plumbers in my little town were making fabulous amounts of money. And all of a sudden one day, they were all out of business. And what happened is plastic tubing, piping came into vogue, and people could fix their own plumbing. They could put on an adapter onto an old metal pipe, and all of a sudden they could repair their own plumbing. And it was so expensive to hire the plumber that nobody could afford them anymore. So they simply went out of business, from really great to nothing. And that is what's going on with the energy companies. They just are not going to be able to maintain because they're living on a very small margin. So anyway, but that's one aspect. But distributed energy, I want to make sure everybody really understands this concept, because my new ebook, Wing Generator, the McCanny Wing Generator World Energy Project, is huge. I mean, this is something that the country simply doesn't understand yet, especially administrators, but it's something that you, the public, has to understand and how to adapt to it, because as the companies, as the energy companies fail, they're going to start raising rates to cover their losses, and in the meantime, the poor guy on the street is going to be hammered with outrageous energy bills, sometimes no energy at all, and as those big colossus energy companies fail, the person, the average homeowner, is going to really take it on the chin unless you prepare. So that's a very important message tonight. First, a couple of messages. I got an email from a talk show host out of Texas, and it was something he was forwarding it to me. This was an interesting twist. There are people who are now vying that governments should not be allowed to have arms. Citizens should be armed, but not the government, because the chaos, the tyranny, the insanity, the people who get into office and then on political motivations and then start controlling military and weapons, it's just a bad equation. It's a group of people who don't have any experience in military. For example, what experience does Obama have in military? I mean, he doesn't have any at all. And not that he runs the show or anything. He's middle management. But still, we have to get back to the point where leaders are truly leaders and get it out of the hands of these middle managers that are pawns of the World Bank. But to do that, you have to pick people who are experienced. But don't give them guns. Don't give the government guns or let them have guns. The way it used to work is the military was a separate department of the government, of the country. And unfortunately, in many countries, the coups, the governments were couped, were taken out, so to speak, by the military, who took over because the politicians were so corrupt, but the end result was a regime that was twice as corrupt because they had the guns, and the people didn't. So you find all over the world corrupt governments and corrupt military operations. Right now, that's the unfortunate situation in the world, is the militarism is gone berserk. And so anyway, the point of this video was that you have to get the guns out of the hands of the government. The government, and remember now, just people be going, well, we need our protection. Remember that the militia was the original, in the 13 colonies when the revolution occurred, it was the Minutemen, it was the militia that did the contributed to the military power, not a standing army. And so standing armies came in as a facility later in the equation, and then they all of a sudden the president became the commander-in-chief of the military. Well, that was good when you had people like George Washington, who had military objectives here on our own soil. But now militarism has become a global way to enhance corporations and install them in countries where they can rape the natural resources. So the idea now is really different. We're not protecting. There's really, in spite of the alleged 9/11 issue, there's really hasn't been any activity. Even since then, there hasn't been what you would call terrorism. The only terrorism really is coming from Ebola and from the military interjecting laboratory-created diseases into the populace. Another, you know, issue, what is the military doing with all of these virus labs, etc.? But at any rate, and so that would go hand in hand, not only remove guns from the government, but the bio labs and the what we call the hospitals. They're not really hospitals, they're centers in which the government is experimenting, the scientists that work for the government are experimenting with extremely dangerous military-grade pathogens, viruses, drugs, chemicals to spray electromagnetic pulse to control the public, etc. Anyway, remove that from the government. The insanity, that's going on today, you can see that that's the source. You have to go back to the source. Okay, secondly, I'm going to read an email here from a listener, and just let me quick pull this up. It says, if my computer will work here, it says, "Dear Mr. McCanny, hope you are doing well. It was a pleasure to read all of your ebooks. If you don't mind, I had a question in regards to your show on June 30th, 2011. You stated that 10,000 computer analysts were going to the hills of Los Angeles to wait for aliens. That's why the troops were sent in to take out the, and this is talking about Heaven's Gate, of course, the troops were sent in to make it look like a mass suicide." Okay, so let me just go back a little bit here. It's something that I have talked about many times in the past, that right before the other issue is that there wasn't a suicide, it was the CIA in there giving them the laced applesauce that killed all of these people. It was the same poison used in the James Jones murders in South America of all of those people. And they're very concerned about any group getting together. And the issue 8 was multiple. They were computer programmers. They were making firewalls and transmission encryption systems that the government couldn't break into. They were selling them, and the government told them that they had to stop. They continued selling very successfully. That's what Heaven's Gate was. Heaven's Gate was a computer company, basically. But they also, this was an issue where 10,000 computer analysts were on their way to Los Angeles at the time to meet with the central group of Heaven's Gate when the suicide occurred. And so anyway, this is just giving you some background information. And so anyway, this email says, that's why the troops were sent in, to make it look like a mass suicide. And then he goes on to say, I remember on 60 Minutes, one of the Heaven's Gate weirdo was interviewed. He claimed that it was a suicide. Subsequently, he took his own life. The joke was that he should have at least received a postcard from the individuals that left this planet prior to this joker. In other words, this guy, after the suicide, appears on 60 Minutes show, which is one of the most controlled news media programs on the planet. But anyway, this joker appears on 60 Minutes and is interviewed stating something, and then he goes on to commit suicide. And then the listener in the email says, I'm not doubting that it was some kind of setup with the barbiturates-laced applesauce. When you're dealing with the CIA, anything is possible. Do you remember this individual being interviewed on CBS 60 Minutes? If so, was this a suicide hoax? Was this gentleman just a pawn in the cover-up? And so then he goes on to say, I listen to your shows. I can't stand fools like Marshall Masters with his used car salesman talk. He's a goon. Thank you, Professor McCanny, for bringing us the truth. Continue the excellent work. Okay, so going back to the issue of the CIA, etc., and yeah, this is all a giant media campaign. Actually, if you look at it, a suicide in L.A. of a couple dozen people would not make the national headlines like this did. The whole issue here was to destroy the idea of groups getting together. And that's the central core issue. It doesn't matter if they were talking to aliens or think they talked to aliens or whatever they were doing. The issue is that the government does not want groups of people getting together, certainly not in this quantity. And so that's why I encourage people, if you're forming a group or you want to protect yourself and develop concepts, etc., keep it small. Keep it with only people you've known really since birth almost. And people who you've known on a daily basis since birth. Other than that, just take care of your family, and etc. Don't make the groups too big or too complicated, etc. Just take care of yourself, because when it comes right down to the wire, you're going to have your hands full and with just the people that are close to you. And go about your daily life. Don't become a weirdo. Don't lock yourself in the basement thinking that the world is going to end tomorrow. Go about your daily life like normal, but be prepared at any given moment to switch gears and go into, like what I talked about recently, self-quarantining yourself, which brings me up to the next topic of the Ebola issue. And my goodness, has this topic ever taken a 90-degree turn? Now it has fallen off the charts. You do not hear, there has been a complete blackout of information on the Ebola issue. So let's go back to the beginning. A guy flies in, just the beginning as far as this issue in the United States. Of course, they're still dealing with it in Africa. They know it's a laboratory-perfected Ebola strain. There's thousands, tens of thousands of people with this in some of these countries where they're literally dying in the streets. And I don't want to go into a lot of graphic detail here, but this is not a good situation. So these people start flying unquarantined without any reservation, start flying into the United States, walking into hospitals. Two nurses contract it. One of them gets on a plane in Dallas the next day and flies up to Cleveland, goes through airports. 70-some schools in the Dallas area closed down. And the next day, there's nothing in the news. It's gone. It's bye-bye. There's not a single word. If you look through the news media today, and all of the major news outlets, there's not a single word on Ebola. Whoa, Batman and Robin. This is just amazing. So here's the result. You have two options. One is that the whole thing was a hoax, that the guy walking into the Dallas Presbyterian Hospital was a hoax. The two nurses getting it, the announcement of that was a hoax. But wait a minute. The medical community announced and diagnosed these people as having Ebola. They go out and start wandering through the public. The guy that died had been released from another hospital, went out and wandered through the public, and then comes back. Ebola is a highly contagious disease because what happens when it breaks the skin, that fluid is the transmittal agency. So, I mean, these people die literally from bleeding to death as the main cause of actual death after they get it. But here's the end result. Either it was a hoax from the beginning and nobody had Ebola, which clearly is not the case. The second possibility is that the hammer came down, the news media and the medical community have been told, do not report or talk about Ebola cases, which means we have Ebola running rampant in the United States. People, now remember, it takes 21 days. We have not even completed the 21 days yet, where these people who have contracted it in the airport and people that then flying all over the country or the world transmitting it to other people, we have not even, at this date, right now, October 23rd, we have not completed the 21 incubation days of all those people out there walking around with Ebola. Nobody's talking about Ebola. If you saw me, I'm tearing my hair out here. This is so incredible. And so it is, and I saw one article on CNN saying, oh, that's really no big deal. So a couple people got it. One guy died. It's really being, there's overreaction. I'm like, you can't be serious. This Ebola is one of the most contagious and deadly viruses on the planet. The people who work in laboratories, I was talking about this on John Moore's show on Wednesday, that John said this is like a level 4 protection in the laboratories, that when people work with this. This is not something that you get around and walk around in the public. So the end result is that there have to be thousands of people, tens, hundreds of thousands of people possibly by now, that have been exposed to Ebola. Because of the, and the news media is not covering this, and all of a sudden, it's going to come out that there are, you know, a rampant number of cases in this country. And they're going to go, well, how did this happen? They're, you know, the steps that you would take to quarantine people for that length of time, and like I said, let's take the nurse who flew from Dallas to Cleveland. She hasn't even been 21 days. The people that were in contact with her on the airplane, etc., it has not even been 21 days yet. So they're all still in the incubation period in which it doesn't show symptoms. And they're transmitting it there with their husbands and wives and their classmates and their work cohorts and flying through airports and communicating this all over the place. Now, if you had a, let's just compare it. If you had a single location in one city where something started. And it went to a group of people at a workplace. Okay, so those people go someplace, and let's say it's a little town, so the people don't leave much. It would be pretty much contained to that one town. But you send somebody through international airports, this is like broadcasting it across the whole world. And like I say, the incubation period of 21 days is not even up. And for some of those people, the second and third generation exposees, if you want to call it that, they're not going to be developing symptoms until mid-November or late November. Merry Christmas. You see what I'm saying? And so what I'm telling people is be prepared to quarantine yourself. No more handshakes, no more, you know, hugs and kisses with people that, you know, even if you know them, just kind of like back off for a while and be prepared to quarantine yourself. And that's all I can tell people, is that the Ebola virus has to be running rampant through the United States at this time, and there's absolutely no news coverage of this at all. Just a side note on that, I've left a lot of people responded to the sale that I had on the webpage, greatly reduced prices, and on water filters, on the stainless steel, on the emergency water filters, on the water filter elements, and so that those sale prices are still there and will remain there. I don't foresee changing. I'm waiting myself for the other shoe to drop on this Ebola issue, when it finally becomes obvious and the public wakes up to the fact that they have been had. Because you have to understand one issue: if they notified the public, let's say that the news media was covering this, notifying the public, then the ability to move this virus in the public would be lost. So only by squelching the news reporting of the Ebola virus can they allow it to propagate through the United States, and that was the original plan anyway. So, like I say, just be prepared to quarantine yourself. That means water, food, and like I've always said, water filters, the only emergency water filter is a gravity feed water filter. Anything with a tube or electrical connection, if you have to hook a tube up for pressure from your water system or from city water or from well water, it is not for an emergency. That will not be with you in case of an emergency. And additionally, it's not portable. So anyway, I have a lot of information on my webpage about that. Go there and read about that. Webpage, jmccsci.com. China is sending a spacecraft to orbit the moon. And the whole object here is to orbit the moon and come back. It's a very simple experiment, but the Chinese just a month ago were able to perform docking and two spacecraft in outer space. And of course, that's one of the more difficult things to do. All of this technology China has purchased from Russia. So the rockets, the docking mechanisms, the technology, how to do all this. So China, in very short order, has come up to speed for building a manned space program. And I somewhat got a kick out of the article I saw in the analysis. The person who wrote the Gee Whiz article for the Western world says, well, this is stuff that the United States had done decades ago. And, well, that's sure swell, but remember that the United States can't do any of that now. The United States has zero capability in outer space. We don't have any rockets. All they can do is send something up to the International Space Station where the guys sit there for a few months and then come back. That's done by Russian rockets. We don't have a space program. We got a $20 billion a year space agency that really has no capability of putting anything like that in space at all. So I'm not sure that I think they're blowing a lot of hot air here, still resting on the laurels of the supposedly stuff, whatever happened back in the 60s. But if you look at it, China is way ahead of the United States. They're doing a little bit of military technology, but mainly concentrating on a manned space program. And they're concentrating on the moon. The United States, remember, lost any claim to being on the moon. They abandoned it, if they were ever there. So whether they were there or not in terms of ownership of the moon or claim to the moon, the United States doesn't have any. In China, like I've said in one of my books, The Diamond Principle, I said by the time the United States gets back there, there'll be a Chinese restaurant on every corner. Here's an interesting question sent by a listener. He said, will water filters filter pee? He said, urine. And at first blush, this seems like kind of a weird question. But in a sense, there have been cases where that's the only water around, pal. And so anyway, he asked me, will water filters filter out urine so it's then drinkable? I'm going to answer this. There's many parts to this answer. First of all, urine of itself is not bad for you. It's the solid human waste that's very much laden with bacteria that as soon as it hits the air starts growing bacteria that's very bad. But the urine is really not the bad part of the human waste cycle. In the Middle Ages, I'll just tell you a little story, the peasants used to sit outside the window of the royalty. This is up in Scandinavia. And the royalty were eating a mushroom, a big mushroom that grew in the woods there in the pine forests of northern Europe. The mushroom was called Amanita muscaria. And they did it to get it was like an alkaline type of high that they were doing. And certainly not recommended that anybody do this because there were also poisons, deadly poisons in the mushrooms that over time affected the nervous system. And the royalty in these upper Scandinavian countries, upper European countries, died off. And this is the part that I wanted to mention, that the peasants would sit outside the window, and there's medieval paintings of this, where they're with a pitcher catching the urine of the royalty. And the point was that the livers of the royalty would filter out the bad stuff, the stuff that was destroying their nervous systems, and the peasants would then drink the urine to get the high or whatever, the inebriation part of it. But the peasants did not die. But the point is that they were drinking urine. Directly now, there is a second part of this answer. Urine is typically very high in alkaline and in salts because these are filtered out by your liver, and so urine is very high in salt content, and the filters, any of the filters except for reverse osmosis, is the only form of filtration that takes out the salts. And so the second part of this gentleman's question writing in was, will the gravity water filters take out salt? Thusly, you could take potentially seawater and filter it and be able to drink it. And the answer is no. No, you cannot filter out salts, saline solution. It doesn't come out in the filter. And in fact, you do not want to filter out the elements, the minerals, etc., that are in solution in water. That's the good part. Your body needs that. In fact, you need a good source of water for good health, and it has to have minerals. Distilled water is not good to drink. If it's the only thing you had for a couple of days, okay. But you basically do not want to filter out water, and so that's why urine is not a good source of water for the human being, not because it's bacteria laden, but because it is so full of salts. It has the same salt content almost as seawater. And we all know you cannot drink seawater. Actually, it's very interesting that the ancient Polynesians, on their ocean-going vessels, they would prime themselves. They would start drinking a little bit of seawater, and then they would increase the amount of seawater that they would drink so that in case of dire emergency, they could drink a little bit of seawater and survive until they got to a freshwater source. But seawater is not something you want to be drinking or on a regular basis. So I hope that answers the question. No, the filters, in fact, no filter is going to take out the salt. The only filters that do are the reverse osmosis, and you do not want to use reverse osmosis in general for drinking water. It's very bad, and here's what happens. I'll explain it by taking 2 beakers of water. Your body is 1 beaker of water, a container of water, and its water has a set solution. It's like the saline solution in your blood. That's why if you get a cut and you get a little blood, you can touch your tongue to it, it tastes like salt. It's this almost identical solution as salt water, your blood. Okay, now take your distilled or reverse osmosis water, which has no minerals, no salts, pour it into the container that has salts mixed. You're going to dilute it. For every quart in your body or in the beaker containing the salts, you pour in a container, equal container of water without any salts, you're diluting it by 50%. Pour in another container, you're diluting it by another, you know, you're down to 30% or 33%. Pour in another, you're down to 25%. That change, just that little bit of additional water with no salt content, is enough to destroy the alkalinity of your body. And so the salts or the mineral content of your body. And so, no, do not drink distilled water. Do not drink reverse osmosis water. Some people add salt. If they have a reverse osmosis filter, they add salts. But there again, what's in the salt? Where is it coming from? Does it contain everything that you need? There were many instances in history where people, the source of water they had, was lacking in certain trace minerals that the body needs, and they developed chronic illnesses of the same type. And then what they realized is that iodine is a great example. They put iodine in salt when you get it at the store, because it's one of the trace elements that's necessary for your body, and there's certain sources of salt that do not have iodine, so they add that. It's a necessary ingredient. Okay, enough of that. But what seems on the first blush a kind of strange question really is a very good question, one that needed some attention on this show. We're ending the hurricane season. We had a couple little near misses a week ago of minor hurricanes, but basically the 2014 hurricane season was a zero. Really, nothing happened. We had some quite a bit, actually, of Pacific storm activity over this season, but the Atlantic had zero, and that's what I said at the beginning of the year. I said, unless there's some created, manipulated storms, we're going to have pretty much zero of a hurricane season. That's what I predicted last spring. And that's because, first of all, the sun is at a very low ebb. It's just not producing energy at all. And second of all, there were no planetary alignments. We had no cometary activity that was foreseen, and nor did any happen. And like I said, a couple of weeks ago, we had a few storms simultaneous in the Atlantic and the Pacific, but they swung north and missed the mainland. So I'm trying to figure out how the Hurricane Prediction Center is going to justify its existence when they predicted actually a little bit above average hurricane season, and there was just nothing. So I imagine they'll find a way to do it so they get their continued funding next year. But just wrapping up the 2014 hurricane season, there wasn't one. Just a quick update on sighting spring. A comet passed Mars this past week. Something in a very, very unusual event where a comet came that close, 82,000 miles away. That would be like a third the distance between us and our moon. So not a big comet, but a comet. A normal small comet coming that close to a planetary object is a major celestial event. But unfortunately, it occurred during midday in the northern hemisphere. I have not seen any reports coming from the southern hemisphere. I would have thought that many amateurs would have had quite a bit of data, but not a shred of data have I seen coming out of the southern hemisphere. But also NASA had 5 spacecraft in the vicinity at the time. So if you look at the Sighting Spring website, the official NASA website, there's no information there. They've got a couple fuzzy pictures from the Mars orbiter. And, I mean, you may as well just take a piece of kid's color crayon and make a streak on a piece of paper. That's all that it shows, which is absolutely absurd, because the Mars orbiter is designed to look at weather on Mars, detailed weather information from Mars. So to simply show this picture of a comet from a distance, a little smudge on a photo, is absurd. It's beyond absurd. There had to be electrical interactions of the comet with Mars, implicating tornadoes, maybe a hurricane activity on Mars. Remember that Mars has been photographed with hurricane activity before, and there's no warm oceans there. So where are the warm oceans that create the hurricanes on Mars? But the point is that all of this activity, auroras, noctoluminescent clouds, all of this activity had to have been occurring on Mars with the passage of this comet. And what does NASA give you? A couple smudge photos. They actually put in photos of other comets and talked about them. The implication is that is this comet, but I could recognize the pictures were from another comet. And then they had animations. So, wait a minute, boys and girls. You don't just throw together nicely developed animations in a minute. So NASA had this all prepared, the animations, the Disney artist rendition of the comet flyby, all ready to go. So they never had any intention of letting out any real data regarding sighting spring passing Mars. So as I expected, no news from NASA, never a straight answer, as we always say. But not worth wasting any more showtime. The event of the last 3,000 years, a comet coming by within 82,000 miles of a major planet, no information from NASA. Remember that the last major comet to come very close to a planet, well, we had the Schumacher-Levy 9, which was 21 pieces of a comet that broke up that hit Jupiter back in the mid-90s. And all of the information that came back there from the primarily Russian sources, the United States attitude, NASA's attitude was, oh, nothing's going to happen. We don't even have a single instrument trained on that area. And what came back from Russia, who also had radio telescopes trained on that area, is that the explosions, the electromagnetic pulses before the comets hit the atmosphere were enormous. And you understand it, when the comet hit Jupiter, it was on the far side of Jupiter. So what they were measuring in Russia on the radio telescopes was the reflection. This was also in X-rays, in visible light, and in radio waves. The reflection of the comet electromagnetic discharges reflected off of the moons of Jupiter, which were behind Jupiter at the same time. So the scenario, the comet comes in, it's almost to the surface upper clouds of Jupiter. The electric discharge snaps the light, the X-rays and the radio waves emanate out on the far side from our view of Jupiter, reflect off of the moons that are behind Jupiter, and then are measured at Earth. That's how much radiation. So the Russian scientists were able to determine, calculate the amount of energy released by these comets, and it was one of them, one of the small pieces, was more energy in that electrical discharge at Jupiter, more energy than all the nuclear bombs on Earth put together from one of those little pieces, and there were 21 of them. As Jupiter turned around, the patches, the sulfur dioxide orange patches, were around like donut shapes, and each one of them made its own impression on the upper atmosphere of Mars. That was the tail material that followed the comet in. But wait a minute, aren't comets supposed to be made of water? They were water comets up until the point where they entered Jupiter's magnetic field, which is laden with sulfur dioxide. So the comets, 21 water comets, all of a sudden, magically, 1, 2, 3, 4, up to 21, as they came into that region of Jupiter, turned into sulfur dioxide comets. And the report from Russia came back and said, these are not dirty snowballs. The Russians were saying this: the whole concept of dirty snowball is dead. And they studied my work intricately over there, translated all my work, and were teaching it in the universities. And they knew, and McCanny's right about this. The plasma discharge comet model is exactly correct. There's no other comet model that predicts changing from water to sulfur dioxide in a region around Jupiter. And that's because the tail source around Jupiter was sulfur dioxide, not water, not hydrogen and oxygen. Okay, so at any rate, the point is that prior to that, a comet called Venus, and there were, of course, many names that the ancient called Venus, came by Mars about 3,000-4,000 years ago and withdrew the atmosphere and oceans of Mars. Okay, well, enough of that, but once again, just a very much expected lackluster presentation of data coming from NASA with comet sighting spring passing the planet Mars this past Sunday. Okay, now I'm going to be talking about distributed energy and the wing system, my new ebook, McCanny Wing Generator. And actually, this topic began as a dialogue with a listener. And this listener's daughter, who had taken an engineering course at one of the major Eastern universities, the engineering course in the three-blade wind generator, where they taught that it was the most efficient design and this and that. And this was what was taught at the university level, engineering regarding wind generation of energy. And so anyway, in response to this, I developed a little dialogue, and I want to present that on this show because it's very important for people to understand the history of engineering and how many times let's put it this way, the theoretical limits are really not well thought out, let's put it that way. And so these are just some examples throughout history of other engineering topics had some problems in the development of those technologies and some misunderstanding, yet it was presented to the public as some kind of gospel truth. Okay, so anyway, this is regarding three different types of engineering developments that were stymied for decades because somebody sitting in an ivory tower thought they knew what they were doing. Okay, and this is leading up to some commentary on distributed energy, the ability to generate energy in many, many locations, large and small, around the United States or any country, and contribute it to the grid. Okay. This is, okay, starting out. Now, this is my commentary to a listener. It says, when I first started working in the telecommunications industry as a professional design engineer dealing with computer transmission, etc., and I'll put a date on this, was like 1982, after I came back from Cornell University, I got a job designing computer hardware at a computer company, and what we were building were IBM mainframe telecommunications computers. It was not an IBM company, make that clear. It was another company. We built IBM compatible telecommunications computers for the IBM mainframes. Okay, so anyway, let me start this over, putting this into perspective what the time frame was, about 1982 to maybe 89. When I first started working in the telecommunications industry as a professional design engineer dealing with computer transmission, etc., a group at Harvard University did a study and determined that the theoretical transmission lines and modems to transmit data was 19.2 kilobits per second. That's 19,200 bits per second. This was on standard twisted pair phone lines. Decades later, we started to understand how to frequency divide the same twisted pair of lines and get lots more capacity. In fact, T1, or 1.544 megabit per second, or 1,544,000 bits per second on the same twisted pair of lines. And then actually, T1 became the fastest speed for a while, but now people are getting 20 meg on their twisted pair lines just because they've refined that technology. But remember, the original theoretical limit calculated by Harvard professors back in the 80s was 19,000 bits per second, just a minuscule fraction of what the real capacity was. And so decades worth of development were stymied because everybody believed those Harvard professors and their theoretical limits. And then I go on to say, what did the Harvard professors miss? Someone somewhere had a better idea. And clearly there was another technique or another engineering discovery that advanced far beyond the theoretical limits that somebody had defined earlier. I said, another story. When the military and secure computing industry decided to go with the public key encryption technique based on products and factoring of large prime numbers, it was based on work of some engineers at MIT. They said it would take more computing time than was available in the next 20,000 years to break the codes. Everybody banked on their work. Except when I solved the prime number problem and showed how easily it is to calculate directly prime numbers and easily break the RSA codes, the industry came tumbling down. But people continued to use the codes, and that is what all the hacking is about that you have read about lately. It is easy to break the public key encryption codes if you know how. Okay, so that's story number two. Now fast forward to around 2004 when I started looking for funding for the WING projects described in the ebook that the customer was talking about. They were talking about my WING Generation Project ebook. Said the engineers thought that the three-blade wind generator was the most efficient design possible. Wrong again. Read the ebook and ask that your daughter not show the professors, as I go on in the email here. But basically, the same thing happened with the three-blade wind generator. People thought that they had the theoretical limits of extraction of energy from the wind, and they were nowhere near. They were so far off base that it wasn't funny, but they were myopic in view. They could only see, they had that tunnel vision, they could only see down that one tube, and being professors, being the good professors that they are, could not imagine anything that they didn't learn in a textbook. And so, it really gets, actually for me, rather tiresome a lot of the time having to criticize, but standard science is in the doldrums. I go to these scientific meetings, and the people there, you know, the last thought they had was when they got an A on their last class in grad school. After that, they went on cruise control. Their brains are on cruise control, and they can't think outside of that box. They think that they learned everything correct. Everything is the way they think it is, and there can be no advancements. Let me do just a little diversion here. China is going to the moon using chemical rockets. Okay, well, that's okay, but anybody in the industry that has half a brain knows that chemical rockets are not going to get us anyplace. It's a problem I describe in my book, The Diamond Principle, and it's well known amongst rocket engineers. If you want to make a bigger rocket, you think, well, gee, that rocket's twice as big. You can carry twice the load. But wait a minute. You have to also carry all the fuel. Now, your rocket is twice as big. It has twice as much fuel. And so and if it's literally twice as big, you have 2 times 2 times 2. You have 8 times the weight of the fuel because the size goes as the volume. The volume is so linear. If you make it twice as tall and it's proportional, then it's twice as tall, twice as wide, and twice as deep. That's 2 times 2 times 2. That's 8 times the amount of fuel you got to lift up. So you need extra fuel just to lift the fuel up. It's called the rocket problem. So doubling the size of a rocket doesn't mean you're going to get more into space. That means you're going to burn a heck of a lot more fuel, I guarantee you that, but it doesn't mean you're going to get a lot more payload, and there's a break-even point between engineering large objects and getting payload into outer space. So our space program has been severely limited by the fact that they're still using chemical vertical takeoff rockets. No assist from wings. Just look at airfoils on the wings of an airplane. You get a 10-to-1 ratio between the direct power. If you had just flat wings with no airfoil and you tried to make an airplane, you would have to use 10 times the force to make that airplane get off the ground. But because of the unique property of an airfoil, you get a 10 times lift advantage. The 747s, the big planes, any plane wouldn't be able to fly. You'd be able to go about 200 feet, and then that your flight would be over. So it's very important to understand what makes these things work. So, for example, Burt Rutan uses the technique that they go up to 50,000 feet with a two-jet engine spacecraft that shuttles the main project craft up to about 50,000 feet, and then they go up on with a chemical rocket the rest of the way into outer space. They save an enormous amount of fuel simply by not doing the vertical liftoff, by using the advantage of airfoils. But do you think NASA or the Air Force can do that? No. They're still laboring on the idea of lifting this stuff there with heavy lift rockets. But there's even another advancement. It's called electromagnetic propulsion system. It's something that I actually worked in myself, developed a lot of this back in the 80s. And those ideas got filtered out of what I did into the Skunk Works. And the electromagnetic propulsion systems are known about by people in inner circles. But China is still trying to labor on the idea of using chemical rockets. The United States, using Russian rocket technology, you just wonder what these people are smoking. Obviously, there are space programs going on in the background of which the public has no vision. You got to believe that the military had tons of devices up around Mars looking at this comet coming by to study it, but none of that information comes down to the general public. The scientists that you see at NASA are what I call Tier 2 scientists. They have no, basically, they're in kind of lollipop land. and don't realize that there's an entire layer of science above them of which they know nothing. But anyway, the point is, let's get back to the three-blade wind generator. It simply doesn't work. It's a technology that the bigger you make them, the more inefficient they are. Okay, so let's get back to the concept of the wing project. The whole concept of the wing project, it's like the telecommunications industry. It's like the other industries that have not been visionary in the past, and it's like, look at the IBM mainframes. Once again, the concept of distributed computing was totally missed by the main players in that industry until it was already almost done and over. Then IBM jumped on the bandwagon, and only because of their ability to put vast amounts of money into that industry did they become what we called for a long time the IBM computer, the IBM PC, the personal computer. And a lot of people thought that IBM developed that. No, they just bought into technology that already existed. But in the terminologies of energy generation, the future is in people developing their own energy sources on site and cutting out the electric utility company little by little. As those companies fail, their cost of electricity is going to go up, so the people that remain with them are just going to be nailed to the wall financially. Also, let's look at something else. Unfortunately, a lot of people depend on city municipal water. And as federal regulations went into effect for basically to control the water, these municipalities have had to increase their investment in equipment, etc., and as a result, the price of water has gone through the roof. And so the poor homeowner is just stuck paying these outrageous prices, not to mention insurance. Like many places that have potential natural disasters, Florida, Texas, California, etc., the people are paying unbelievable prices for insurance that many of which probably will never pay. But at any rate, it's very important. It's something I believe everybody should read my book, The Wing Generator, so that you understand this concept of distributed energy, the ability of people to create energy either at your house level or in a community level or a small level or all the way up to major energy installations using wing, not wind, but wing generation power, and the ability to generate electricity and put it out on the grid distributed. This means that it's not going to be even, but you put the control, just like the PC, distributed personal computer world, you put the control out at the end user location. That's where you control the voltages, and that's very easy to do. I'm out of time again. This is Jim McCanny. Visit my webpage, jmccsci.com. The sale continues. The drastic discounts on the water filters, water filter elements, etc. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.